Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, hello Houston, broadcasting live from the 34th annual Houston TriStar Collector Show. And boy, the Rockets made that trade to go small, and it takes one game for them to make a statement last night in L.A.
You said it right, brother, statement win. That's exactly what that was. Again, it was a very small sample size, but given the immediately after the Capella-Covington move, and then all the questions and all the ridicule and that surrounded last night's game made this bigger than really it probably was. It was a mid-season NBA game, and take that for what it's worth. But when you consider all the talking heads that came out and called the Rockets everything from cheap to crazy, right? I mean that they're crazy. There's no way they can win. Smallest lineup in 50 years to take the floor. And not only that, you're taking the floor in the Staples Center versus one of the tallest, longest lineups in the league, one of the more dominant teams in the league. And what do the Rockets could do? They go out there and absolutely make a statement. First and foremost, it validates the moves that the Rockets made. Again, I'm not making some statement that they're going to go win a championship. What I'm saying is last night's win validated the move that the Rockets made to move Capella and to get Covington. For all the reasons that we mentioned yesterday, man, you saw it unfold in real time last night in the Staples Center. This was definitely a statement W, and it starts with the fact that it validates the moves, JB.
There was so much to like from last night's game, and Covington coming off the bench, he played strong. He had those big threes in the fourth quarter, too. Like, it validates the victory. It validates the move in terms of getting the victory against the best team in the Western Conference. But I also thought it validated Robert Covington there in the fourth quarter, hitting a couple of threes, playing really good defense. Yeah. He had a block of Anthony Davis there in the fourth quarter as well. I thought he validated himself, too, to the Rockets fans.
Yeah, look, he validated his value to this franchise. I think Daryl Morey, his move, his trust and confidence in his move was validated. I think the scheme that D'Antoni wants to run was validated. And then you talk about all those things working together as one, top to bottom, the identity of this mm-hmm. organization.
Nailed
the
it.
Identity of this team and this scheme and what they want to do. Is blatantly obvious. And you know what else is blatantly obvious?
What's that?
Their commitment to it, top to bottom. Obviously, I just mentioned Daryl Morey. I just mentioned Mike D'Antoni. And then you look at the roster and what you saw and how it all unfolded last night, you saw guys buying in to an identity, move without the ball, move the ball itself, shoot threes, get to the free throw line, clear the lane for your superstars that can get to the rack as good as anybody in this league. Double team one of the best bigs in this league when he touches the ball. And we can talk about P.J. Tucker and the beating he took. We're going to talk about that. That's the biggest question. We'll talk a little later about the questions and concerns that we have. But I tell you what, I saw one guy last night walking off the court holding his arm, holding his shoulder.
Who's that?
And that was Anthony Davis.
Yeah, that's
Anthony
right.
Anthony Davis walking off holding his wrist. Why? Because them little short stout cats that the Rockets ran out there were banging on his wrist and banging on his forearms. And while I know it, they took a pounding, man, there was one guy that noticeably was hurting last night, and that was AD. And so this team is bought in on both ends of the floor. I think it's contagious on both ends of the floor. And when you get an entire organization bought into one identity, it is a very, very powerful thing.
I think that the one thing you said, too, is the everybody buying in, right? And I think that the final group that you need to sell to that are the players, because it's easy to get that buy-in from Daryl Morey. It's easy to get that buy-in from D'Antoni. But sometimes, you know, the players have a little bit of difficult time of that complete buy-in. And I'm not talking about just the Rockets. I mean, if it's a new coach going to a new program, that buy-in from the players is sometimes the hardest thing to get. And D'Antoni talked about it after the game. He said, look, the fact that we won in L.A., that's a big deal to the players, because if there weren't some people buying in before, they're buying in now. We just showed that with our system, with our identity, and with how we're going to play the rest of the season, that we can beat anybody in the Western Conference. So if the players weren't buying in before, they're buying in now.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's definitely about the players buying in, man. There's no doubt about it. And I think you saw that top to bottom. Is you saw guys sharing the rock. You saw Harden concede to the guys that had the hot hand defer to those guys in critical moments throughout the entire four quarters of the game. He got his. He got in there and got his and had his put his little stamp on the game, no doubt about it. But he's one of those guys that has the freedom to pull and shoot the rock from anywhere on the floor. He's got the freedom and the authority to stand at half court and dribble it around until 4 seconds is left in the shot clock.
That drives me crazy.
And he did not do it. He did not do it. He took great shots. He got to the rack. He shared the rock. And look, man, it's contagious. I mean, there was very little standing around last night. And when you talk about buying in, the players buying in, that's another thing that I think that this game, this W, not necessarily because the Lakers give a rip. Like, I think the Lakers look at this and they go, yeah, we got beat. It's a midseason game. Who cares? But if you took a poll of all of the individuals that cover the NBA, and I'm talking about NBA inside and out, and said, who is the number one team that the Rockets, with this scheme, who is the number one team that you're concerned about? And it would have been the LA Lakers.
No doubt about it.
Their ability to throw 3 7-footers at the Rockets. And then so I don't know how much it means to the Lakers in terms of the Rockets being more or less of a threat to their to the championship. But I know when you talk about the people that cover it, when you talk about the Rockets inside and out, players, front office and everybody, this was a big time W. This was a statement W. It was a confidence building W. And if there were any guys that weren't bought in last night, I didn't see them. But you can bet your bottom dollar that if they weren't bought in last night, they're bought in this morning.
Clinton JB on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610, NRG Arena, the site. We're at the 34th annual Houston TriStar Collectors Show, talking about the statement victory that the Rockets got last night in Hollywood over the Lakers, 121 to 111. And James Harden, you brought him up for a moment there. He didn't have, his best night. Another encouraging thing that I took out of this is you had James Harden, who's your MVP, who's your best player, and he scored 14 points last night, only took 10 shots. He realized, I'm not shooting the rock that well, but I can still be a factor on the offensive end because the Lakers are throwing double teams at me. I'm getting Avery Bradley every time down the floor. I'm being hassled. I'm being pressured. You know what James Harden did last night? He didn't force up some bad shots. He knew he wasn't having his A game offensively with the shot. What did he do? He moved the ball around. He got others involved. And then Russell Westbrook just went off. And I think a large part because Harden was getting a lot of the attention.
Yeah, I found it interesting the way that the Rockets the Lakers tried to defend the Rockets. And what they did was put AD on Westbrook.
Yeah.
Why? Because Westbrook isn't going to pull it from outside, so AD could hold back tighter to the paint. And then Westbrook is who? He's the guy that wants to get to the rack more than anybody in the NBA. So now you've got your longest defender on Westbrook who really, other than his mid-range jumper, he doesn't have the ability to take that. He's not going to beat you from beyond the arc. So he had to come into AD. And now that there was times when he did that successfully. There was times when the Rockets clearly got into a pick and roll. Really more of a, I guess it was more of just screening at the top of the key and getting AD off of Westbrook, getting Westbrook on Bradley so he could get to the rack versus a smaller defender. If that didn't work, then Harden took it to the rack versus a smaller defender. I thought that they not only committed to the scheme that they're completely and 100% bought into. I mean, it is what they're going to be, so you might as well buy in. Not only did they buy in, but I thought some of the schematics throughout the game were pretty impressive. It was fun to watch. It's a different brand of ball, and it was fun to watch. So I enjoyed the hell out of it. That was a big win.
I've been harping on the fact that the Rockets trading a lot of rebounding, and one of the things I was going to watch critically with the Houston Rockets going forward after trading a top-5 rebounder in the league was the rebounding numbers every single night. That wasn't a concern last night. Rockets got out-rebounded, but only by 38-37. And one of the encouraging things for me, too, is I didn't feel like the Rockets played their best game. I'll be honest with you. I thought they played well, but I feel like they were far from their best. Harden didn't play all that well. There was a couple of times whenever they did give up some rebounds that I felt were a little bit lazy, like you weren't boxing out. And I felt a couple of times they got lost defensively, and that should be something that's going to take a little bit of time to get adjusted to one another once Robert Covington sets in as your best perimeter defender. Once you get really really on sync with having to play small ball for basically 48 minutes. You're going to start to play together defensively. But I don't think the Rockets played their best yesterday from a defensive side, from an offensive side. I think there's still room to grow for this Rockets team, too.
Yeah, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a better night where the supporting cast carried the load and shot the ball so well from beyond the arc. I think
the shots were so good.
Oh, no, that's the kicker with this new ball movement, this new Harden-driven system, essentially. I know Westbrook went out there and got his points, but Harden being willing to, again, defer and move the ball and move without the ball, to me, was one of the biggest things on the offensive end of the floor that stood out. I mean, the thing that's interesting to me, too, is that the Rockets had 40 points in the paint. For a team that didn't have anybody on the floor above 6'6", 6'7", that's pretty impressive, especially when you're talking about a team that was matched up against a Lakers team that could throw 3 7-footers out there.
Right.
And you still got 40 in the paint. So, for me, I'm just excited about what I saw on the floor last night with the Rockets. There are a couple of question marks. You know, can they hold up and continue to do that for a 7-game series? I don't know. You know, can PJ Tucker hang on with playing that physical brand of ball? I don't know. Can Covington spell PJ Tucker enough, you know, in a 7-game series to let him catch his breath? You know, we'll see. But I know this. I know that you got to. I feel much better about the Rockets' chances of making a run in the playoffs right now than I did watching Capella jog up and down the floor. Great player, put great minutes out there. Great energy and great effort. But this team's better without him.
One game in, I had my hesitations to this trade. I had my doubts with this trade. One game in, I'm all in. They sold me last night. The way that they played, the way they – look, the points in the paint, you mentioned it. They were getting to the basket at will, and there was nobody there to contend the shot because you had their bigs, whether it was Davis, whether it was Kuzma. Yeah. Dwight Howard didn't even play in the second half because Frank Vogel had to adjust to how the Rockets were playing. So that's how they got all those points in the paint. They were beating dudes one-on-one. There was nobody there to protect the rim because they had to respect and defend the three-point line. I'm not so sure the Rockets' three-point shots aren't going to go down, actually.
Yeah, well, here's the interesting part to all of this is that you've got guys, like I'm watching the game and AD goes down there and he catches a lob or something, which he does against every team in the league, by the way. He doesn't just do it against the Rockets, who are small right now. But it's all about, oh my God, what are they going to do? They don't have a rim protector. They don't have Capella. And literally back-to-back trips down the floor, it was McLemore, I believe. It wasn't even Westbrook who did it all night long. It was McLemore and I believe it was House. Back-to-back layups in the paint, and it's silence after that.
Yep.
If AD gets a lob or if AD gets points in the paint, it's because the Rockets don't have something. But the Rockets are constantly going down there getting to the rack, and it has nothing to do with the fact that there's 3 7-footers or 2 7-footers on the floor. Did those guys have their time to shine? Sure. And get some blocks, and did their size and length matter? Sure. That's going to happen every single game. But to not be impressed with the Rockets' ability to get to the paint without a big in the game is crazy.
Yeah, it's the opponent for me too, right? It's the fact that they did this against the Lakers, because you look at the rest of the contenders in the Western Conference, there's nobody in the post that scares you as much as Anthony Davis. And yeah, Anthony Davis got his, but the Rockets went into Staples Center last night and beat the best team in the Western Conference by 10 with their new modern cutting edge. First time in 50 years starting nobody taller
years.
Than 6'6", and the Rockets got
by
it
the
done
way,
last night.
Covington 6'9", if you look at Wikipedia, just for the record.
6'7", if you look anywhere else.
They kept saying 6'6", 6'6". I was like, hell, I've
he's
seen
long,
anywhere
though,
from 6'7", to 6'9", and I'm like, okay, whatever. However y'all want to sell it, man, I'm buying.
He's long. I'm not sure he's not the best option to defend the post, by the way, going forward. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham coming up next. The Astros clearly the villain in Major League Baseball. There's an all-time baseball great that thinks so, too. We tell you who that is and what he said next. You're listening to Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, the Astros, clearly the villain in the baseball season coming up in 2020 in Major League Baseball. They'll be wearing the black hat as far as the opposing fans around the league are concerned. There's an all-time great out there that thinks the Astros are the villain as well. Hank Aaron, Hammerin' Hank, going down on the Houston Astros.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised.
They didn't steal signs back in your day?
They did. They didn't steal them that way.
Do you think the punishment fit the crime?
No, I don't. I think whoever did that should be out of baseball the rest of their life.
Hammer and Hank, the second all-time home run leader in Major League Baseball, calling for a lifetime ban of the Houston Astro players.
Wow. That's well, Hammer and Hank, that would be, I mean, the immunity aspect of what the commissioner, Rob Manfred, giving immunity to the players so that he got honesty and could clean the game up, that probably would not have happened if those guys knew that they were potentially going to receive a lifetime ban from the league. So while I totally understand where Hank Aaron's coming from, it's just impossible. Here's the deal, because Hank Aaron wouldn't know. He wouldn't know what went on and to what extent it went on if that were possible on the back end of this thing.
Right. I like how he was asked, you know, did you cheat back in your day? Were there signs still back? Oh, yeah, there were signs still back in our day, but not that way.
Yeah, we didn't do it that way. Yeah, look, I mean, that kind of bucks my take yesterday as far as the fact that former players don't really care. Here's the deal. Is I'm standing pat with that. I
meant more current players whenever you said that.
Well, I just think former players that were involved in the steroid era are going to have a hard time shaping their mouth to be mad at the Astros for stealing signs.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can't
ultimately,
say that.
You know what I mean? Now, look, I think there are guys out there that are the Hank Aaron type guys that played the game the right way and were super, super clean and never touched anything illegal, never bent the rules, and is an all-time great. I think there's outliers out there like that. There, you know, there's those anomalies that have the guts and quite frankly, have the genuine, sincere, strong opinions like Hank Aaron and can honestly give that. And it holds some – look, it holds some validity. I get it. But I just think there's a lot more guys that are sitting at home biting their tongue because they know they did something like that, or they used steroids, or they were successful because somebody on their squad was using steroids. And so there's going to be some outliers, some Hall of Famers that don't like it to the point where they feel comfortable speaking out against it. But I think as a whole, you're still looking at a large percentage of former players and current players and current players that are in the media. I mean, former players that are in the media that are gonna sweep this under the rug and move on.
And, you know, it's a really slippery slope. Like if that's the way you wanted to go, what Hammer and Hank is saying, that the punishment was not steep enough, that there should be a lifetime ban for every player, because once you go down that slope, now you're opening it up to every team needs to be investigated. Every player needs to be investigated. And there's a reason Major League Baseball didn't do this back in the steroid era either. It was never against the rules in Major League Baseball, but they kind of just were proactive. Okay, now we're going to put these rules in place, and we'll suspend you if you get, you know, if you test positive for any performance-enhancing drugs going forward. Nothing retroactive. Now, Barry Bonds might have got blackballed out of the game, and some of the others might have gotten blackballed out of the game. But if you go down that slope, like Hammer and Hank is saying, Major League Baseball would be in deep trouble for
me. Well, look, it's easy to say, you know what I mean, it's easy to get behind the mic and say, well, I think everybody should have a lifetime ban, and in reality, you know, if there wasn't an immunity, if they weren't given immunity, then you know, I don't know that I could argue with you that there should be more or heavier discipline dropped on these guys. But truth be told, again, the fact is that you wouldn't know. Major League Baseball would not know that this cheating was going on at length,
right,
and in depth the way that it was if it wasn't for the immunity. And so when the way to put a stop to it, the way to not tarnish baseball any further is to give those guys immunity and move forward.
Hammer and Hank trying to hammer the Astros. And it's interesting, too. I'm very intrigued to see what happens with this Boston Red Sox report that's supposed to come out at some point before spring training. Those players got immunity, too. So Robert Manfred being consistent in that regard. We'll see what comes out with the Boston Red Sox, the look that Major League Baseball is taking into their 2018 season. Clinton, JB, the Astros are the villains, of course, in Major League Baseball. Should the Astros embrace that? Should they handle that a certain way?
Absolutely, they should embrace it. I think there's several ways that they could embrace it. They're probably not going to take some of my advice.
Well, they'd be fools not to.
I told you this before, man. I'm a big alternate uni guy. Like, I love college football. When a team like Oregon started it back in the day, Maryland's got a good helmet. When teams started the alternate uniform thing, I'm into it, man. I'm digging it. I really, really like it. Outside, like, I don't want Alabama changing their uniforms. I don't want the University of Texas changing their uniforms. I mean, there's a hand. Michigan should never change their uniforms. There's a handful that should never change their uniforms, but there's something really powerful about what Oregon did, right? So I really got into.
Oregon has an alternate uniform every game now.
Right. And look, I'm going to tell you, 15 years ago, I'm training a quarterback. And he in Little Rock, Arkansas, and he walks out with Oregon gear on.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, what the hell do you know about Oregon, man? Why are you wearing that Oregon stuff? And I mean, I'm fresh out of Arkansas, you know.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, I just love their uniforms. I mean, that's how powerful that is, you know. It's that brand awareness. Oregon was way ahead of the curve, but I'm big into alternate unis, man.
All right.
Could you imagine if the Astros have an alternate uni that's all black?
All black, an all black top. Not a pants. So that'd be ugly. We want the
black
pants.
Black on black, baby. Black
I want the black hat. Black. I want the symbolism of a black hat for sure.
I want black nose to toes, black with the white star on that sucker.
That might be the ugliest uniform I've ever heard of.
It's the statement. It wouldn't be ugly. That would be so sweet. You're crazy, boy. That'd be nice.
Black on black?
Black on black all baseball? The way down. Hell yeah.
Oh, man.
Come on, man. You can't give some half-ass attempt like look like the White Sox. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be black on black on black, baby. That would be, and of course, it's just an alternate uni, but we could build up all the steam and story behind the fact that it's the black sheep, you know, they're blackballed. they're backed into the corner. I would love that. An alternate uni. And it does, look, black's just my idea. That's what I would like. It could be something else.
They used to have those black unis whenever they just moved into Minute Maid. Remember they had those black tops, but they would never wear black pants. They'd have those black tops that had like that brick red and that powder tan or whatever it was called.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, now I don't want all that. I'm talking about black.
You're not talking about throwback. You're talking about an alternate right now, all black. We're embracing the villains of being the bad boy.
I don't even know if that's legal from a rule standpoint in Major League Baseball.
Well, I don't think the Astros have been caring too much about the rules for a while now.
Yeah, good point. I mean, if they're going to push the envelope on other things, they can push the envelope on that. But the uniform, I think, would be super cool. I told you yesterday. Which this is extremely far-fetched, but the if you want to talk about notoriety and brand building, if they got off the plane where would that be? In L.A., I guess, with the Angels?
Yeah. Somewhere in the Orange County or whatever.
Right. If they got off of that plane in fatigues like the U did back in the day, it would set the media world on fire, son. it would be absolutely beautiful. So the fatigues would be super cool. And then I think a way that's more likely to possibly happen is their walk-up music.
Yeah, I think that will happen, actually.
Like, I wonder if certain guys put a little tweak in their walk-up music instead of trying to be cute with it or, you know, something that sends the message that we hear y'all talking, we're coming.
For some reason, I had that song, the Carrie Underwood, where she drags the key.
Let me stop you right there.
I don't know why I thought of that.
If your walk-up song is Carrie Underwood, your ass ain't playing for me, Chief. I'm going to go ahead and leave
I don't
it
know
right
why
there.
I thought of that. I didn't think it was a good idea. It just popped into my head.
Yeah, I don't know. That was not my intention right there, was for it to be something with Carrie Underwood. I don't have any particular songs in mind, but you know, I don't, Carrie Underwood would not be the artist.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought of that. I don't think it'd be a good idea.
Well,
but
I got
just
an idea why you'd think about Carrie, hell, but it ain't got nothing to do with the Astros and them being underdogs, I don't think.
713-572-4610 if you have some ideas. There's a few texters that have some ideas. They need a trash can bobblehead night. How would you feel about that? Handing out some trash can bobbleheads where, you know, you can just the trash can bobble or something like that.
I don't know if I'm big on trash can bob, the trash can stuff. That's old. It's tired. It was just one way. I mean,
that's 2017.
What are we going to do? Are we going to make fun of the Yankees and the Red Sox with some kind of Apple Watch joke? You know,
it's a good idea.
It's get out of here.
Hi, Yankee.
Here's the deal. Swinging and banging should be that would be my walk up right there. Would be swinging and banging, and my T-shirt would be banging and swinging. I'd change it so it'd be legal.
Yeah,
that's what I would go with. That would be. Look, man.
Alex Bregman's going to do something. I guarantee you.
Who do you think has the most guts?
On the Astros to do something like that?
Yeah.
Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman, for sure.
So you think Alex
Bregman carried a bat to first base after he hit a home run. Yes, Alex Bregman's the answer.
I'm just telling you, man. That ESG swinging and banging would be my walk up song if I was playing for the Astros right now.
We'll see. The Astros, if you're listening, Clint has an idea for you that you should heed his advice. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, we're broadcasting live from the 34th annual Houston TriStar Collector Show. Coming up next, Deshaun Watson. He'll be eligible to sign his first extension this offseason. Should he hold out if he doesn't get one? We talk about it next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
If I were him, there's not a chance in heck I would play a snap for them next year without a new contract for $40 million a year. I wouldn't take the field next year until I get the money. So if you want to wait, see what Mahomes gets over the next few months, I'm cool with that. But I'm not letting monsters try to destroy me for a whole other season without getting over $100 million fully guaranteed for my family and $40 million a year.
Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham from NRG Arena, the Houston TriStar Collector Show. That was Ross Tucker on with our guys in the morning, Wade Smith and Cecil Shorts. He's pretty clear. If he's Deshaun Watson, he's holding out until he gets a new contract.
Yeah, look, Smitty and I had this conversation about a week ago, man, and I just looked at Smitty and I was like, Smitty, is there any way that these guys take the field? These guys, or with Mahomes as well, like, is there any way that these guys take the field without guaranteed money? And yeah, there's a way. I mean, and look, the CBA negotiations will impact contracts probably in a bigger way than you and I know.
Sure.
And so the timing of that is, you know, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. If they get it done by March the 18th, it's probably a good sign for Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. But without going off in the weeds on the actual CBA and when they agree on the CBA and when it goes into effect and all that and how it affects contracts, you're talking about a guy. Look, I'm looking at it here. You're talking about Deshaun Watson, 4-year contract, $13.8 million, right? He is fully guaranteed, $13.8 million over 4 years.
Uh huh.
You're talking about a guy that's gonna sign a contract, has earned, doesn't need another year to earn it, right? Has earned $35 to $38 million a year. So he's gonna triple his 4-year earnings in per year salary moving forward. And to think that you take the field next year, base salary is $1.17 million. Cap hits $4.4 million. You know, I don't know how all that stuff breaks out, but to take the field next year and earn $2.3 million is the yearly cash as for next year. To take the field for any – hell, I don't care what it is. To take the field for anything less than 40, 50, 60, $100 million guaranteed,
right,
and risk injury – I think is absolutely crazy. The pushback would be, well, I mean, let's be honest, an injury isn't going to end a career.
Not with the talent that he has. Not an elite quarterback like he or Mahomes.
Here's what I encourage people to do is think back to RG3.
Yeah.
There was a time and a place when RG3 was fixing to get stupid money. He may have gotten that kind of money. I don't remember when it was he got injured.
No, I mean, I think he got hurt late in his rookie year. He never got that huge contract.
But that affected his career, right or wrong. The whole deal affected
absolutely
his career. And look,
right,
I'm not saying that RG3's situation has anything to do with Pat Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. I get it. All I'm saying is that one injury, particularly to a knee or a hip like we just saw with Tua, people, when Tua first got hurt, they thought it would be career-ending, right? I mean, so to think that those kinds of injuries aren't possible, is there anything that could happen that would end a career? Probably not. But significantly derail a $40 million a year, $100 million-plus guaranteed type of deal? Yes, absolutely that could happen. So for me, man, if I'm with Ross Tucker, if either one of those guys take the field without some guaranteed monies on the back end of it, more than the $2 or $3 million that Deshaun's due to make now, man, I think it's just crazy. I don't see how Deshaun's representation even I mean, builds a case to do that.
Right. If I'm the agent and I'm the one trying to protect Deshaun Watson, the biggest thing that I'm going to look at is the fact that last year, 2 years ago, Deshaun Watson was the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. This year he still took a lot of hits,
yeah.
Even though the offensive line got better.
Jay,
but Deshaun Watson's known to hold on to the ball a little bit. I'm protecting my guy from taking all these hits that he's taking.
You make a great point. This isn't a guy that's not using his legs and that's playing the game solely between the ears. This is a guy that's playing a very physical style of quarterback, and so that's a valid point. I mean, it's not. I don't think anything career ending would happen, but definitely something that would knock him out of that 35 to 38, 39, 40 million dollar a year category could absolutely happen. And so, to me, he shouldn't take another snap without guaranteed money. I'm in with Ross on that deal. I do think this is, when you're talking about Deshaun Watson, I do feel like one thing that's going to stand in the way is I think he's going to struggle, and I think people around him, I think people in the Texans organization, they know that he's going to struggle with any kind of holdout situation or he's going to struggle with putting himself in any kind of situation where it affects his team.
He's a selfless guy.
He's a selfless dude, and he's always going to put his team first. And that's part of why he's so valuable. I think he's really going to struggle with it. If this comes down to where there's a lot of pushback from the Texans, he's going to really struggle with this situation.
You know, it's interesting. Like, you look at it from – like, Dak Prescott's not the player, in my opinion, that Deshaun Watson is. So
no.
Dak Prescott not really in the same spot to where this past season he could say, you know what, I'm going to hold out, guys, because he needed to make the money, and he needed to also prove that he can play at the top 10 level at the position. I'm sure Dak Prescott thinks he's better than that, but this is Deshaun Watson. I mean, he's a two-time Pro Bowler, could be three times if he didn't get hurt his rookie year. Everybody puts him in the class of, you know, the up-and-coming elite quarterbacks in the NFL, and they expect that from Deshaun Watson the next 10 years. The numbers would back that up. And like you mentioned earlier, the contract size he has next season, he's eligible for an extension, but the amount of money he's making next year is so small.
Yeah.
You have to protect yourself. And I get Deshaun is selfless, and he doesn't want to put his teammates in a bad spot. He doesn't want the attention of being somebody who's holding out this diva, personality or persona.
Right.
But that's when his agent has to get Deshaun Watson's back.
Well, here's the deal. That's when I tell you who's got to have his back. Is Cal McNair.
Okay.
I mean, this is a deal where you talk about Dak Prescott. I mean, look, the Cowboys got one of the best offensive – they have three Pro Bowlers on the offensive line.
Uh-huh.
Right? They got Ezekiel Elliott. Whether you like him or not, he's one of the top three all-around three-down backs
in this
league.
No doubt.
You can plug in – and look, I'm a Dak guy. I like Dak. But you plug in Tua – you make a move for one of these young quarterbacks and plug them in that's a polished quarterback, uh-huh. Burrow or Tua, which obviously they're top five draft picks. Cowboys aren't going to do that. But my point is there's guys that come around every year that you could plug into that Cowboys system, and they'd more likely have some pretty good success. You plug one of these old heads that's coming out that's available into that Dallas system, they're going to have a lot of luck. They're going to have a lot of success in that system. Deshaun Watson is a guy that there's no conversation to be had about who the future of the Houston Texans is. If you plugged in a different guy, and if you – no, Deshaun Watson is the Houston Texans' future, period.
Yeah, no doubt
about
it. And
so when you say that, like if I put Deshaun Watson in Dallas, Jerry Jones would walk in there and ink that thing without asking anybody a question. This is my guy, I'm locking him up, right? This is a situation where Cal McNair should force this to get done ASAP. Regardless of what the panel thinks, the GM thinks, the head coach, the offensive coordinator thinks, this is one of those where Cal is the one that's committed. He don't have no choice. He's going to be a Texan for as long as he wants until he sells out, right?
Yep.
A coach has to win. Cal's going to be here for forever. And Deshaun's the guy that you hit your wagon to, baby. You hit your wagon to that guy regardless of who the coach is. Deshaun is the guy that Cal McNair should step up and say, get it done. Before the season starts, we're not having a holdout.
Well, let's be honest. Who's more valuable to the franchise, the quarterback Deshaun Watson or the GM/head coach Bill O'Brien? And then to your point, that's whenever it comes from the hierarchy of the Texans. Hey, this is a guy we need to take care of. We need to take care of right now.
Yeah, look, JB. There's to me, it's It was refreshing to hear Ross Tucker be so adamant about this particular situation. It's reassuring, right? When a guy like that that's all he does is study the NFL and the numbers and what should happen and how it should happen and what happened in the past 10 years and what should happen in the next 10 years. Ross Tucker is one of the absolute best in the business. So to hear him come out that sternly about Deshaun Watson and what he should do speaks volumes, man. Again, we're into these national narratives, right? I mean, that's going to be the national narrative for the most part about Deshaun Watson, of whether he should play another snap without a contract. It's obviously going to be that same conversation with Pat Mahomes. Two guys that love the game, two guys that probably are going to really they're going to struggle through that process, but their representation they absolutely must hold the organization's feet to the fire and make them ink it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see which one of them signs first, and if both of them want to sign this offseason when they're eligible for their first contract extension. Clinton, JB, at the 34th annual TriStar Collectors Show at NRG Arena. I flip it over to the team side, Clint. If I'm the Texans, I get this done sooner rather than later. We see it every year in the NFL that with inflation of these contracts, that whenever you sign the contract, yes, it's the most expensive contract for the position ever, whatever the position might be. But then over time, you set the market, and then all of a sudden these other quarterbacks who aren't as good start making more money than you, more money than you. So the longer you wait, the more expensive it becomes. Also, the wrinkle of the new CBA. The caps are going to grow. Players are going to get more money, according to all the reports we've seen from the proposed CBAs. You get it done sooner rather than later. Now you have the quarterback taking a smaller percentage of the salary cap. So I look at it from the money side of the game, too. I signed Deshaun Watson quicker because now I'm going to have more money available, the bigger piece of the pie going forward once the CBA is done.
Boy, you're really getting off in the weeds on me with that deal. It's just the common sense of it is he's earned a large amount of guaranteed money, and to take the field for $2-4 million, whatever's left of signing bonus and salary and any kind of roster bonus or whatever that may be, whatever's left is not worth risking guaranteed $100 million. It ain't worth risking it, man. And it's the common sense of it, right? Whether they get it done now or later, you know, the situation you're talking about. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that somebody that's back like when they put a rookie minimum.
Yeah, the rookie deal.
They put a cap on the rookie salary. That's what I'm looking for. The cap
and
on the rookie salary.
Slotted based on when they're picked.
Yeah, so that's somebody had to be the last monster deal, right, before that happened. Now, this is probably going to work in a little different, obviously different direction, where somebody's going to have to be the last big money free agent to sign before that new CBA is agreed upon, whether that's again agreed upon March 18th or it's agreed upon pushed off into next year. Either way it goes, somebody, some big name quarterback, some quarterback that's going to get a boatload of money guaranteed is going to have to understand that he may have to bite the bullet of whatever extra dollars would be attached to a new CBA. I don't know what that is. I know it's probably a pretty good chunk. But look here, you come to me and say, Clint, man, let's get this thing locked up. Let's get this $100 million guarantee locked up and move forward. I'd be pretty quick to sign that thing versus just sit around and wait and another year and do all, you know, risk it getting injured or something changing between now and then. I'd be quick to go ahead and make that. Get that thing inked and let's move forward.
I like it from both sides. I like the guaranteed money of a player because I'm going to be making a ton of money, one of the most expensive contracts in quarterback history, and I'll also like it from the team's perspective. Lock up your star, let them know that he's the future, and you're going to hitch your wagon to Deshaun Watson going forward. 713-572-4610, what do you make of this text? You guys have a very over-the-top opinion of Deshaun Watson. He's much closer to Jameis Winston than he is Patrick Mahomes.
What does that have to do with anything?
I'm just asking your opinion of Watson as a quarterback.
It's 100% inaccurate, but but it's. I mean, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, he's saying that you have an over-the-top opinion of Deshaun Watson, that we both have an over-the-top opinion of Deshaun Watson, and we're talking about contract extensions, and we're putting him in the same category as Patrick Mahomes.
That's not an opinion. It's not an opinion, guys. That's what baffles me. Like, Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes are going to sign the next two humongous deals for quarterbacks, more than likely. And if they're not the next two, they're in line and they're going to be a market-setting deal down the line. That's not my opinion. That's what's going to happen.
Right, right. I think he was asking more like, you know, why do you think so much of Deshaun Watson? Like, he's trying to put him, I guess, because, I mean, look, Jameis Winston could be a free agent this offseason, too, and we'll see what Tampa Bay does with Jameis Winston. They have a decision to make with
not
Bruce
even,
Arians.
That's not even, I mean, it's apples and oranges, man. It's apples and oranges. I mean, there's some guys out there statistically that'll get on the bandwagon of Jameis Winston, but it's apples and oranges. It's not even, I mean, Jameis Winston has snapped the football and sling it all, like, just recklessly sling the football all over the park, and you end up having a 500 season because your quarterback threw 30 interceptions. That's nothing close to what Deshaun Watson is.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the point. I mean, I wish they'd have left Jameis Winston out of the text, because that's to me, that's ludicrous. But I maybe I do err on the side of thinking more highly of Deshaun Watson than some people do.
Yeah.
But I understand. Like, to me, I wouldn't think as high of Deshaun Watson as I do if I didn't have a pretty good idea of how he handles business and how he's a student of the game and how much and the level of intangibles that this guy possesses. So it's not I know a lot of people out there just watch the games and they go, man, it's an athlete out there and he's throwing it around, he's a pretty good quarterback, but he ain't Patrick Mahomes. There's a lot more to it than that. I'm not trying to put him in Pat Mahomes' category. You're mistaking the conversation of the next two quarterbacks that are going to sign major deals and us putting them in the same category, and that's not what's going on. Ultimately, they're the next two in line to get big deals, and that's the end of the comparison for me.
Right.
But I do believe that Deshaun Watson is a franchise quarterback that if he's not a Houston Texan for the next 10 years – then, or let's say that may be a little bit of a stretch. Let's say for the next 7 years, then the Texans aren't doing something right.
Right.
If you can't win a boatload of games with Deshaun Watson and put a very convincing product on the field with Deshaun Watson as your quarterback over the next 7 years based off of what he did in college and what we've seen to today, then it ain't the quarterback's fault. I promise you that. It ain't Deshaun Watson because he can't make this throw or he can't make this read or he can't. It ain't Deshaun Watson. You got other problems.
Here's another texture. I think Watson's a smaller Cam Newton. Texture is right. He holds the ball too long.
No. I disagree. Cam Newton.
I'm just reading the text.
Cam Newton. Deshaun Watson. Cam Newton has never, ever technically thrown the football as well as Deshaun Watson throws a football. Not even close. It damn sure ain't close now. Cam Newton, he holds, I mean, the hold the ball aspect.
That's a valid concern.
Yeah, no question. Does he hold the ball too long? Absolutely. Does he try to make something out of nothing way too often? Absolutely. Is he put in the position to do that way too often? Absolutely.
You think it's more of the latter than the former?
Yes, I wholeheartedly believe that if Deshaun Watson was coached up consistently the right way or in the right system, that he wouldn't have to put a Superman cape on against Buffalo to go make a play, and that running back, a third, four-string running back, special teams guy, run down to the 40-yard line. I'm just telling you.
The next great 34 in Houston.
Some people choose to look at that and go, well, Deshaun Watson is not smart enough to see the protection, see the pressure, move the protection. Instead, he just snaps the ball, catches it, and goes and makes a play. I choose to believe that is a sign of the coaching that guy's receiving. If Deshaun Watson is not able to identify pressures and very, very elementary fashion redirect protections to pick them up more times than not, then I choose to believe that that's more on how he's being coached every day, what kind of freedom he has within that offense to do those kinds of things. I choose to believe that more so than I believe he don't know what the hell he's doing. He's just snapping the football and going with it.
Yeah.
That's my honest opinion. I find it hard to believe that a quarterback can go win against a Nick Saban defense and not have the ability to process between the ears basic, fundamental protection, correction, pressure pickup type of stuff. I don't just go, well, I'm a big fan of Deshaun Watson, so here's what I think. I mean, I've watched the guy forever. I've watched his film forever, and I've played the game. It's not what I'm talking about is very NFL quarterback 101. In fact, we watched Joe Brady, after not being good enough at Ohio State, come and have a mediocre year his junior year and then explode his senior year. And you watched him correct protections in a system that corrected. Now, whether you think it's him or the guy on the sideline or the guy, Joe Brady in the booth, it doesn't matter. We watched that guy do all those things.
Right.
And so when I sit there and watch a game and I watch Dan Orlovsky on TV at night, and he talks about, you know, it is jaw-dropping the number of times that the Texans don't have answers for pressures. I don't look at that and go, well, Deshaun Watson don't know what the hell he's talking about. Don't know what he's doing. I think there's a large number of people out there that do that. And I don't, but there's more to it than that. At this point in his career, it's not about Deshaun Watson missing reads and not having the ability to process. I refuse to believe that.
Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham coming up next. The hate in the TNT studios is real. We tell you what we mean next on Houston Sports Leaders, Sports Radio 610.